It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
It's Open Call. It's Monday, February 25th, 2019. I'm your host, Chris Graves, flying solo today. Eric Michaud is in Adelaide, Australia at the Adelaide Fringe. He is doing Thrones the Musical Parody at the Gluttony venues every night at 9:30, except Mondays. And I believe it's there through March 17th. So please go check that out. And just to give you a little update, we're just going to hear a dispatch that Eric sent to me from Australia detailing the first couple days of the festival and how it's been getting settled in and starting. And I've not heard this yet. So I'm going to play it and then we're going to do some reactions afterwards. And just in a little bit of LA news, we previously discussed the show Ragtime at Pasadena Playhouse. In case you're still wanting to see that, that has been extended, is what I heard. And congratulations to them. It's been getting very, very good response overall. So go check that out while you can. Coming up for me, we have Cats at the Pantages. And it's actually going to, the entire run of Cats will be started and finished before Eric gets back from Australia. So sadly, he will be missing Cats. And then I can't remember what else is next. We have Fiddler on the Roof coming soon, too. So now, with no further ado, let's hear from Eric from Australia.
Hey, it's Eric Michaud, and I'm reporting from the Adelaide Fringe in Adelaide, Australia. Originally, the plan was I was going to report back weekly with shows I was seeing at Fringe and how our show was going. I'm here with Thrones, the Musical Parody. And interestingly enough, I'm going to change topics a little bit today because I have been incredibly sick since we got to Adelaide. Our show opened or went into previews last Thursday, and I did the first performance. Last Friday. I did the first performance and came off stage afterward feeling very ill and dizzy and began vomiting, and then took the Saturday night show off and felt like I was going to be able to do the Sunday night show, so I went to do the Sunday show, and the same thing happened, and I actually ended up in the emergency room at the Adelaide Royal Hospital. So it's been kind of a whirlwind. I haven't been back in the show since last Sunday, so I kind of wanted to change the subject originally from what I've been seeing and doing, because I haven't been seeing and doing much. I've been in bed for most of the time I've been here, recovering. But I did want to talk about the importance and the blessing of understudies. I've been an understudy. I've been a swing before. A lot of times it's a job that you don't get the glory, you don't get the praise, but you are such an integral part of the show. And I have to talk about that because my understudy, thankfully, for Thrones, this guy named Will Jacobs from Chicago, is remarkable. He's saved my life, quite literally, over the last couple of days. He was so completely prepared. And it's funny because I'm not usually the type of guy who likes to miss performances. I don't do that. I'm not the type of person who, like, takes being in a show lightly. So the fact that I've been out so much is driving me crazy. And I kind of remember saying to him in rehearsals, I'm like, you'll probably not go on much or at all for me, because I don't really miss performances. It's not something I do. And then, of course, the second show, I'm out and have been out, you know, pretty much since. So having that kind of safety net and having that support in place is so important and gives you such a sense of ease as an actor, because you know that the show is in good hands and everything's not coming to a screeching halt because of you, which is an awful feeling. You know, if you don't have an understudy, you know that you're not giving necessarily your best performance if you do go on because you're sick and you're trying to just get through it as best you can. Or if you do have an understudy and they're not good, then you feel like or they're not prepared. You feel like you're letting the show down because you're so sick you can't do it. So having a really solid, really funny, really talented, really prepared understudy is so wonderful and such a blessing. Because I really feel like I emailed him the day of that I first decided I wasn't going to be, or figured out that I wasn't going to be able to do the show on Saturday night, I sent him an email and I was like, I just want to thank you because I feel okay making this decision and not pushing myself and not, you know, God forbid, pushing myself to a place where I really end up really doing something wrong or getting really sick, which ended up happening Sunday. But I was so thankful to have that in place where I felt, okay, I can take care of myself. I can do the smart thing and step back and say, I need to take tonight off because I just can't do the show right now. Excuse me. And not feel like I was letting everyone down because I knew he was prepared and I knew he was ready to go in. So I wanted to talk about that and kind of just talk about understudies that I've seen in shows that I've seen. There have been a lot of times, you know, we all get disappointed when you open the playbill and that little slip of paper falls out and says like, oh, you know, so-and-so's out of the show today, you're seeing an understudy. But sometimes it ends up being a real blessing. I will say, and it's terrible that I didn't research her name to think of who I saw, but the first time I saw Thoroughly Modern Millie on Broadway, Sutton Foster was out. It was very soon after the Tony win. So I was like, you know, eager to see her and see what her performance was all about. And her understudy was on, and I really loved her understudy. I thought she was fantastic. I thought she was warm and funny and charming and great and just kind of everything that you wanted in Millie. I didn't love the show. I'm a big fan of the original film, and I don't love what the musical became. But that being said, I really enjoyed this particular girl that I saw. I want to say her name was Catherine something. I'm going to look it up at some point. And then I went back and saw the show again when I knew Sutton Foster was going to be in it so that I could, you know, see what all the buzz was about. And I honestly didn't love her. I kind of enjoyed the understudy's performance better. Now, it's possible because she was the first person I saw. But I also kind of felt like Sutton Foster was so eager in that show. I love Sutton Foster. Don't get me wrong. I think she's a very talented performer and I enjoy her and I think she's dry and I think she's funny. But in Thoroughly Modern Millie, especially after the Tony win, you could just kind of see that I have to be incredible look in her eyes. And I remember thinking during the show, it looks like she's about to eat the first three rows of people. Like she just had this kind of frenzied ambition about her that was a little bit terrifying. So anyway, I really much enjoyed the understudy's performance when it came down to it. There was a particular time that I kind of got in trouble. I was on a trip in New York. This was like 96 or 97. So I was in college at this point and, you know, a theater kid and a little bit snobby, as we all are. And I had a slot open on like my theater trip shows, a show slot open. And I just decided I was going to TKTS it and figure it out when I got there what I was going to see. So it turned out that the show that was most viable for me to see was Victor Victoria, the musical. However, Julie Andrews had already left. Liza Minnelli had already left. I was seeing Raquel Welch. And I remember thinking, well, I'll get a ticket and maybe she'll be out today because her understudy is Anne Ranolfsson, who I had seen twice in the national tour of The Secret Garden and who I think is one of the most underrated leading ladies of Broadway musical theater there is. Her voice is incredible. And if you've never heard her, check her out because she's got this gorgeous soprano, but then it's also a really earthy kind of belt that's really lovely. Anyway, so I went to see Victor Victoria and alas, Raquel was in. But before the show, I had gotten there really early because I was just kind of, you know, one of those people that's like, I'm going into the city once today and I'm going to fill up every minute and I may have to get to the theater like an hour before the show because I may run out of theater stores to look at and I don't want to go all the way back to where I'm staying. So I kind of was looking at the merch table in the lobby well before curtain and struck up a conversation with the merch guy. And we were kind of like getting chummy and talking back and forth, and we were both theater people and yada, yada, yada. We were chatting a lot. So at intermission, I go back out, and I had kind of, I feel like, made it clear that I wasn't really looking forward to seeing Raquel Welch do this role, but that I was interested in seeing the show, especially because I'd heard that the show wasn't great. So I come out at intermission, and I go over, and I'm looking at the merch again, and he asks me what I think, and I jokingly, thinking he was going to think this was funny, was like, is it possible to get someone to go backstage and kneecap Raquel Welch so that Anne Rinaldson can do act two? And he did not find that funny. And suddenly we were not friends anymore. So anyway, I didn't get to see the understudy. And that's just a long story about an understudy or the want of seeing an understudy. But I'm sure we all have stories of like times that we went to go see a show, didn't end up seeing who we thought we were going to see or wanted to see, but ended up being very pleasantly surprised. The first time I saw Natasha Pierre off Broadway, I didn't see Dave Malloy. I saw his understudy, who was great, who was really, really great. I would have loved to have seen Dave Malloy because I never saw him do it at all, but he was great. So there's always a chance to discover a new star or find somebody new when you're seeing an understudy. So don't necessarily go in with a bad taste in your mouth, because you might find someone that you think is even better than the person you thought you were going to see. And on the flip side of things, having an understudy as an actor is such an integral part of the show, and they are such an important part of making a show work and keeping a show running. Understudies are the unsung heroes of musical theater, or in theater in general. And I don't know where we'd be without them, but I'm really, really blessed and glad that I have a really great one here. I'm going to throw it back to Chris. I think he's building an episode around all of this. And I'm going to do my best. I'm feeling a bit better, so I'm going to try to get out there and see some shows this week. I'm hoping to at least see, there's a show called Seance here, which was in Edinburgh 2 years ago, and I did not see, but some of the cast of the show that I was in at that point saw and said was very scary and interesting and cool. And I saw a show that this same theater company did last year in Edinburgh called Flight, which was very immersive and very creepy, and I loved it. So I'm very excited to see that. There's some great circuses here, some great comedy, and I will report back with everything I see as soon as I see something. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
There you have it. That's Eric's first dispatch from Adelaide Fringe, performing in Thrones of Musical Parody. Again, that's every night at 9:30 at the Gluttony, except for Mondays through March 17th. And I believe they have some dates in Canberra, Australia, after that. We'll get another dispatch from Eric next week just to see how it's going since then. Were there any more missed shows? Was there any more drama of any kind? Is everybody feeling well? That kind of thing. And also, we will be doing a long distance recorded podcast once we basically we weren't able to get settled and get the technology up and running, but I think we'll be able to do it in the next week or so. And locally here in Los Angeles, again, Ragtime has been extended at the Pasadena Playhouse. I will be at UCB Sunset Thursday and Friday. Thursday, I will be in Magic to Do at 7 p.m., which is musical improv. And I'm also doing musical improv on Friday with Baby Wants Candy. That's at 7:30 at UCB Sunset. And some other fun updates. I wanted to talk about two auditions for plays one that I had and one that I will be doing soon. I can't remember how many details we put even mentioned here in this podcast, but I just wanted to talk about a couple weeks ago, I auditioned for a Broadway play called Ink, which is going to be at Manhattan Theater Club. And I'm in Los Angeles. I had to self-tape my initial audition. And basically what it was I could self-tape an audition and be considered a New York local hire, which means they wouldn't pay for me to live in New York City. But I would get to be in a Broadway play if I got it, right? So why not? I self-tape it. So I send it to them. And then a couple days later, they said they wanted to do a callback. And I've never done this before, but I did a callback through Skype, which was very, I would say, not ideal for someone who wants to like get timing down in an audition. I was in Los Angeles. The casting director that was reading with me was in New York, and the director was in London. So not ideal, I would say, for like, putting on your best performance. But I did fine. I think that I... had a good rapport with them, meeting them. It was all very pleasant. I think we all kind of recognized that, like, it wasn't the best situation for doing a reading. And cut to a couple days ago, they announced their cast for Ink on Broadway, and I was not in it, which was not a surprise to me at all, especially when you see the cast that they found. Every single person in that cast, I believe, has been on Broadway before. So, again, there's a thing in this business in general that you sort of, once you get in, you get validated to keep going, to keep getting hired. Because, and I totally understand this, because like recently I was on the decision-making end for an improv project, and someone that was up for the project had performed at a place called Boom Chicago in Amsterdam, which is a long gig where you go to Amsterdam and you perform improv professionally every night in English for audiences in Amsterdam. And it's got a very rich history of, like, well-known people doing Boom Chicago. I believe both Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele have done Boom Chicago. I believe Josh Myers, who's Seth Myers' brother, but, like, it's a pretty strong list of people that have done Boom Chicago. And it sort of is a signifier that, like, hey, they're pretty trustworthy. You know, you're sort of saying, like, someone else has vouched for them, someone else has hired them. It mitigates your risk when you hire them. So it makes sense to me that someone who's been on Broadway appears to be less of a risk than someone who isn't. And honestly, this will come up later, but I ain't even in Equity. So I'd have to join Equity probably to be in this play. So I would have loved to have done it, obviously. It would have complicated my life incredibly, because I would have had to actually leave. Rehearsals, I believe, start tomorrow. And I would have to be in New York theoretically until July. So pretty crazy. The reason I'm bringing up auditions, though, is I have another audition next week that I'm submitting myself for a play here locally in Los Angeles. And first, I think it's interesting. I am not Equity. I could cross join as a member of SAG, but to this point, I haven't really seen, like, a strong reason to join Equity. But because of that, I will be going to an EPA audition, and I have to basically, like, show up when it starts and just kind of sit around until it finishes. So I think it'll be interesting. I'll probably make a little podcast based on my experience doing that. I've only auditioned for a couple of plays here in Los Angeles, and I've actually run a couple of auditions for when we've cast Thrones, the musical parody, here in Los Angeles. So I'm hoping that if I get there in the morning, somebody will have a flat tire or there will be some gap and they'll let me audition. I already emailed the theater and they said to just show up and hopefully something will open up. But the reason I bring this one up is that it's a very interesting part, because it's a lead in a play, and I think it's an original play. I don't know if there's been a professional production of it yet. But the lead of this play, could it be very difficult to write something more like me? Certainly compared to every other part in the Western canon of theater, there are very few parts that are more like me than this part. This part is a Asian man in his 40s who has gained a little weight, who went to school to be an actor and sort of left his family behind to become an actor, and now has had to move back to Southern California to take care of his elderly father. But, like, all of those things have happened to me. And the reason I bring this up is it is so, like, I very much doubt that there's anyone in the Los Angeles area that is a working actor that fits the part better than I do. However, I also feel like that's almost a guarantee that I won't get the part, just because of the way show business works. A long time ago, there was, in the last season of The Sopranos, a part that was, by the character breakdown, exactly me at the time. And it was when Uncle Junior went to a mental hospital near the end, and he had, like, other people that he was at the hospital with. And the way this character was described was a literal definition of, like, what I was at the time. And I couldn't even get in the room to audition for it. It was amazing. It was like, it described me exactly. And then when I first got to LA, my first year here, there was a pilot that was casting. And again, a series regular in a pilot that the description of which was almost exactly a description of me perfectly. And I did not get in for that one either because, well, that was silly because that character was described as Asian and he was married to a Caucasian lady. And then the Caucasian lady was cast as a Korean woman. And I think they were kind of like, well, then the other guy has to be white. So anyway, I'll give you an update after I go to that audition. I just think in both of these cases, like this Broadway audition I had and this one, I personally always keep my expectations really low. I think I used to get more excited. I used to count more of my chickens before they hatch on these kind of things. You know, but I have learned the lesson now of like even beyond getting a job, you know, I have gotten jobs now. I have basically like bragged or spoken about something at every single level as if it was a done deal at almost every stage of something happening, including and up to having shot something and having it not appear. And that wasn't just like this did happen to me recently on a TV show, but it happened to me a long time ago on a commercial where it was a national network commercial. It would have meant a lot of money. And there was a long tracking shot where like four people in a row spoke and I was like the fifth. And the actor that was the fourth person was having trouble with their lines. And it was a very artificial sort of, there was a specific tone to it where you had to speak in a certain way, almost robotic. And it was very important that you nail your five or six words in a very specific tonal way that was as if you're like a computer spitting out these weird terms, basically. And the person in front of me couldn't say their lines properly. And then I was after them in this long single take of this commercial. And I remember thinking on set, like, I think this is going to be a problem. And it was because when they aired the commercial, which they aired like on every show, and then even in movie theaters, we showed up everywhere. And the single take tracking shot, you know, first person says their thing, second, third, and then right before the fourth person cut. So me and this other actor got cut out of the shot. And then I get a letter. You get a letter saying like you've been cut out of it. So then you don't get any money for that commercial because you're not in it. So now I mean, I'm happy to talk about opportunities that I have as long as I'm not like under some kind of NDA. But I pretty much never talk about like, you know, well, I'm going to be on Broadway because I got this callback. I think it's super interesting to meet a pretty prominent Broadway director just through an audition process, just through sending a self-tape. But I guess I like to be surprised by these things. You know, I guess I feel like there's probably some level of superstition in my head somewhere, some irrationality that's like, well, if I act like I really don't want it, then maybe I'll get it. That's probably working as well. But yeah, like next week, I'm going to go to this audition. I'll do my best. But the fact that it's so perfect for me, I think, is just it's just an impediment to thinking about. I can see a million ways why thinking that this part is perfect for me and I should get this part because it's like my life exactly. I can see a million ways in that in which that would not help me as an actor at the audition. So I'll give you an update next week. Hopefully we'll have either a dispatch from Eric from Australia or a conversation long distance about what's going on. But until next week, I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.
It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.